All right, switching gears. We're in Shulchan Aruch. Siman Hey, Kavanat HaBrachot. This is a very intense siman. It's a siman that challenges us. It's a siman that doesn't just require us to say brachot, which we're going to spend a lot of the rest of the year talking about different aspects of tefillah, but is charging us to also think about what we're thinking about when we're saying the brachot, to actually have kavanah, and that is something which is halacha lamaaseh. We'll discuss to what extent one is required to have these kavanot, and to what extent one is encouraged to have these kavanot. But one shouldn't be discouraged from saying brachot. That's not the goal. The goal is to realize again, slowly but surely, how to infuse more and more kavanah, which we just talked about in Mitzvot Tishrei, more and more kavanah into the mitzvot that we're doing, as the Rachel pointed out, as being a prerequisite to making that mitzvah meaningful. So first of all, it's just important to note that the first four words are their own halacha. Yichavin bebrachot perush amilot. Period. One should have kavana in what one is saying when one is saying the brachot. Then he goes into all of what we got, spent a lot of the chavrutah time and last time in what the different shemot of Hashem are and how to be machavin in them. But first, just period. Yichavin bebrachot perush amilot. Salach alamaseh. A person should have kavana of just understanding the words that one is saying when one says brachos. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah down on the bottom says. K'mo shamru chazal, shel yizrok ha-bracha mipiv el yichavin beit amira. The person shouldn't just throw the bracha out of their mouth, but rather should have kavana when every moment that they're saying the brachot. Yivarech benachat, and that, something which we certainly have lost in a lot of ways as well, is that this time, take a minute. It's okay to stop, to pause, and to say a bracha slowly. To say a bracha calmly, quietly. Somebody asked me, and I forget. I think it was you. But if you're eating in the middle of a class, to wait till the teacher stops for a second. See, when you say bracha ta Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Shakol Nieh Bidvaro, that you can even have the 15 seconds to just think about it and not just kind of mumble under your breath so you can get to the water, right? The idea of shifting the focus that it's not just a matir for the water, but that it's an ability to recognize and have a moment of ibonenut, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the room with us always, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this to me, and that I'm saying that with as much kavanah as I can have. V'zeh lashon sefer ha-chasidim. If, by the way, when I do make a mistake, please correct me. Please correct me. I asked your permission beforehand, but I want to ask your permission again. I apologize for getting over halacha with you in the room. Which we all saw inside. Again, the idea here is that a person should constantly be trying the best that they can to add as much kavanah that they can, but also even on the simplest level of understanding the words that we're saying in each of the brachot that we're saying. Then we got into the very complicated discussion of what does it mean to have kavanah for Shem Hashem, and what are the different kavanot of Shem Hashem. So we have three primary shemot of Hashem that we're dealing with in the context of this siman and in general when we're davening. And those are going to be...
Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei.
Right, we have Shem Havaya. Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei.
Right,
we have Anut.
There's a word for it.
And then Elohim.
What?
There's an English word for the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. We learned it in Jewish history today, but I don't remember.
Yeah, what is it called?
Tetra. Yes. What does tetra mean?
Four.
Right, so it's the four-letter name of God.
Okay.
we're going to stick to Shem Havaya. We have Shem Havaya, we have Adnut, and we have
Elohim.
Good. And the question becomes, what is the kavanah that one should have with each one of these shemot? So let's go through them one by one, and then we'll talk about permutations. Okay? With Shem Havaya, ideally the goal is many comment on the fact that Shem Havaya is a conjunction of lots of the beginning of three particular words, which is
Haya,
Hoveavi. Yeah, the concept that God is beyond all time. It's the word, the name of God that we don't actually say out loud because since we live within the context of time, our lives take place within the context of time. It's not something that we can't understand. It's a recognition that God is beyond our understanding, and if it's beyond our understanding, we can't talk about it. In the same way that every time we talk about God in any of our shirim, we always say, so to speak, because it's as best as we can do to describe, because we can't actually pretend to describe God in essence, because God is beyond us. Since this name is relating to God in a way that we can't understand, we don't even use any language to use these letters, and we'll talk about the implications for Kavanah soon. Adnut is actually the simplest one to remember.
Adonakol.
God is the master of all. And it's very much related to the word, so it's the easiest one, I think, to keep in mind, that God is the master of all. Elohim. So Elohim is relating to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a God who works within the confines of reality and is the one who's really pulling the strings behind anything that happens in the natural or the physical world. The way that it's dealt with here, what phraseology does he use? Oh, he uses the one that I'm familiar with. Takif Baal HaYecholot Uval HaKachot Kulam. That he's any strength or power in this world, any ability in this world, any power in this world, that all things in this world all come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is recognizing that God stands above, God stands within, and God stands beyond. Right? God stands above, God stands within, and God stands beyond. Yeah.
What do you mean when you say that Shem Elohim represents that God stands within?
Shem Elohim.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, that's just my ability registry point. Elohim is that God is within any force that exists within the physical world is really God acting in the world. Okay. When a leaf falls from a tree, it can't happen unless God wills it to happen. If I nervously twitch the back of my marker, it's because God's allowing me to, and He's the ultimate force that's allowing that to happen. But that's all coming from God. All ultimate forces in the world are all coming from God. And Shem Havayah is beyond, like we talked about. So the goal, ideally, in the same way that one is meant to keep every word of every bracha that they say in mind, one should also, ideally, keep these particular kavanot in mind. We didn't write this one out. It's in that last line of the Shulchan Aruch. Should keep these in mind when saying each one of the names of Hashem. Now let's add one last layer, and then we'll talk about halacha lemaisa. Okay? If there are any differentiations of halacha lemaisa. The one which becomes complicated is Shem Havayah. Because with Shem Havayah, it's written as Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, but since we talked about how we can't actually say the word Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, pronounce it based on its letters, we actually refer to it with Adnut. So then the question is going to be, on a very strict halakhic level, the question is going to become, should my kavana be based on the word that's actually written, even though I can't say it? Or does the kavana follow the actual word that's coming out of my mouth? Does it follow Havaya, or what I'm actually saying, which is Adoshem? Which one? And the answer is ideally?
Both.
Both, right, of course. No, there's no way to make things simple. The idea is ideally both. But as you saw in Seif Katan Gimel, that in most circumstances, at the very least, if one had to choose between the two, generally speaking, we follow the Kri, we follow the Kriya, the way that we say it. And so even when one is reading Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, and they say, they're reading it, if they're saying Adoshem, they should have in mind Adon HaKol. At the very least, the goal should be to have in mind Adon HaKol. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
That's it. I didn't know.
Yeah, so that's what the Mishnah Berurah is saying, bottom line. With one exception. Yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry, I was confused. You said that we should follow the Kri, meaning how it's written?
No, we should read the Kriah, not the Kri, the Kriah.
Oh.
That's the way that he phrases it. Or rather, not the way it's written, but the way we speak it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. What's the notable exception that he brings from the Gra?
Shema.
Is Shema. So the issue with Shema is that the first pasuk is
Shema
Yisrael. That we're fine with, right? Those words all have specific individual meaning. Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem Echad. It's a pasuk which we're not going to go into the depth of now by any stretch of the imagination, but on a very simple level, what do I do with Hashem Elokeinu? Hashem Echad. It's all, this pasuk is all dealing with differentiations within Shem Hashem.
Right.
So my kavanas here become more important. Also, we'll see as we go further on in the Hilchos Kriyat Shema that there is more of an emphasis on a necessity of complete and pure kavana for this pasuk, the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema. Between those two reasons, there is a desire on behalf of halacha for us to have a greater level of intent in this pasuk. That when we say yud kei vav kei shem havaya in this pasuk, one should think both the kavana of the kri, the kriya, as well as the ptiva, which is to think adon hakol hayahu ve'viya. Then one should think just both kavanot.
Just for Shema.
Always if possible, realistically, at least for Shema. Okay? But it's just thinking both of those kavanot of adon hakol and hayahu ve'viya. In terms of when one should potentially have kavana when saying Shem Hashem, so do you have the kavana before, during, or after? So that's a machloket, because if you have all of the proper kavanot while you're trying to say a very short word, you could end up distorting the word. And the last thing you want to do is say a bracha or say a pasuk and distort God's name while trying to do it right by having the right kavana. That's not going to fly, right? That gets complicated. So either you're able to get to a point where you are pronouncing the word correctly and able to fit in all of that thought into one small space, or if a choice between having the kavana before or after, the post can recommend that one should try to have the kavana beforehand. Right? You think to yourself, Adon HaKol Hayahu Ve'Ado Shem. Right? You kind of, at the end of that kavana process, you say the word. Because the kavana is the preparation, meaning the kavana is what's infusing the mitzvah. So you want to infuse the word before you actually say the word, as opposed to infusing it after it's already been said. Given the choice between the two. Yeah, Shosh.
Does this apply to all Kriyat Shema?
You're talking about the first pasuk.
No, I'm saying, like, you say Kriyat Shema theoretically four times a day. So, would you... Well, one,
two,
three. One Shachar, one Shema, one Shachar.
Oh, the one in, you're including the, okay, fine, I got you.
One Ariv and one Kriyat Shema Mitzvah.
Good.
So, does this apply to all four times you say it, or is it just for Shachri or Ma'ariv because they're official, like, you're saying all three...
Just them all.
All three paragraphs of Shema.
All four. Rabbi Feder says all four.
Okay.
Survey says... All four. Yeah.
Is this also discussed in Hebrew Kriyat Shema? Is this also discussed?
Just the first pasuk.
How come, like...
There's uniqueness to the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema. We'll talk about it more when we get into Hebrew Kriyat Shema.
That's what I was asking.
Yeah, I know.
So, there's some sidurim that, like, say, like, you don't have kavana for Hashem's name, whatever, but then for, like, Kriyat Shema, it doesn't say that, so.
If you show me, I'd like to see the sitter that says that.
For Yichavod, it says you should have special intention when davening this.
All right, again, we have a lot of tefillah to go through. Right now, we're talking broadly. We just washed our hands. Right? He's helping us now, after spending 2 weeks on how do we wash our hands and say the bracha, and when do we say the bracha, now he's like, okay, you just start. Now we're up to the part of the morning we got to Baruch Atah Hashem. That's as far as we've gotten, right? We went to the bathroom, we washed our hands, we got dressed, we got our shoes on, we're washing more time, we got to Baruch Atah Hashem. That's where we are in our mornings. Slowly but surely, we'll get to Pesukim Zibra. Yeah.
Just curious, do you have any ideas for why this was not the first Siman?
Like, because if we assume that, you know, somebody else can give me the answer to that question. We've been talking about this for a month now. Why would this be Siman Hey?
Because you just said the first bracha that has Hashem's name.
Why is this the first bracha that you're going to say? What's the presumption within Siman Dalet? Siman Dalet was about what?
That you just woke up.
Washing your hands.
Washing your hands. It included which hand washing?
For Shachri.
Which Nagel which Nagelvasser didn't include? It included Nagelvasser. It included washing your hands to remove Ruach Ra.
Right, right.
So you weren't able to say a bracha until now.
Oh, because you had
Ruach Ra. Right? It's a logical progression here. There's a narrative that's being told in Shulchan Aruch that we lose when you move from the Torah to the Shulchan Aruch, when he adds in all of the halachot that the Torah didn't have. Right? Because that was what we emphasized all the way in the first shir about try not to lose the narrative, that the move from the Torah to the Shulchan Aruch, there were a lot more halachot that he added to do a whole topic instead of just tell you the flow of your day, but don't recognize that we have a flow of the day here. So what happened? We got up. If they weren't, at that time they weren't wearing clothing, so the next thing I had to do was put something on, then go to the bathroom if I really have to use the bathroom, then wash my hands, then, again, in their time evidently they were able to do both Nagelvasser and Antonadayim at the same time. We've discussed that it's different Achalamaisa Bismanazeh. But then what would you do? Then you said your first bracha. You said Antonadayim. But it's all taking us in a logical direction. There's a narrative here about what our day is supposed to look like. We're going to try not to lose sight of that. Keep asking the question, though, because if we lose sight of that, we got to plug it back in.
Wait, I'm still lost, but it could just be because I missed a couple of shiurs on Antonadayim. But haven't we already said the bracha at this point for washing our hands to say Tefillah?
No, what we're up to, if in the past, in the many, many past Urim that we've been working on building up a logical progression, this is the...
this is beforehand.
This is the first bracha that you would say according to the Shulchan Aruch.
Thank you.
Tov. Now, are we always expected to have all these kavanot all the time if it's really, really hard? So there are kulas. There definitely are kulas. Rav Shlomo Zalman... in Halichot Shlomo Aleph Dalid, that was what we said before. It's Rav Shlomo Zalman who says that that if the kavana will disrupt your actual saying of the Shem Hashem, that you should have the kavana before you say the Shem Hashem. That's from Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman in Halichot Shlomo Aleph Gimel in Aleph Gimel, and Rav Nevin Sol quotes Halacha Lamais in his Mishnah Berurah as well. So he brings the concept of making a tznai. One can make a tznai, can make a condition for the rest of the day, at the beginning of the day, that every time I say Shem Hashem, my kavana should be properly kefi adin. Since it's he says that one can make this tznai because this halacha is not found in the Gemara. And since our kavana is very weak, and these dinim are not found in the Gemara, so one can technically make a tznai to say all of my kavana, for the rest of the day, my kavana should be proper in all of my Shemos of Hashem. I'm intending now that they should all be with the proper intent, even if I don't have the proper intent.
So you don't need proper intention when you make this.
So you should have intention with, no, when you make the tanai, you should know what you're saying when you make the tanai. So the goal is I would say, to do both. Meaning there are many poskim who don't like this idea because it undermines, meaning the idea is that you're undermining the whole goal of the halacha, which is to have a weighty sense of what it means to say Shem Hashem while you're saying Shem Hashem. However, there are times where we're going to space out, be really thirsty, and say the bracha on our water in the middle of class and forget that we just said a bracha 10 minutes later. Right? That's when you're sitting there going like, do I have to tackle on this trip or did I have, I don't even remember if I drank. You know, I can have those moments. So like, that happens. So the question is, you know, what's better, what's worse? I think I would recommend do both. You know, at the beginning of your day, you can make this tznai. If you want, I can give you the text. And the, Harini migaled da'ati shemeyata ve'ad machar shebekol pam she'azkir shem adnut tia kavanati shu adon hakol ubekol pam she'azkir shem havaya baruch hu kavanati shu adon hakol haya hove v'yeh ukshazkir shem elokim kavanati shu takif ba'al yecholet uval kolot kulam. I know that by heart because I say it every day, meaning I start off my day with it also. It appears in Sephardi Stern because they take this stuff more seriously.
Is there a reason behind it again?
Behind what?
The fact that you can make it tonight.
Meaning we don't like the concept of making tanaim like that, but since it doesn't appear in the Gemara and our kavanah is weak, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, then at least make the tanai, and that will suffice. But one should do one's best to try, and also that does not apply to the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema. But for the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema, one really needs to work to make sure that they have the proper kavanah for the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema.
Is that in the Gemara?
What?
Is it in the Gemara for the first pasuk of Shema?
Are we sure?
Sorry,
Rav Shlomo Zalman is claiming that this requirement of having kavana for Shemos Hashem is not in the Gemara, but he says at least for the first episode of Kriyat Shema, one should have the kavana even if they make the tanai. Is that because the Gemara puts an emphasis on the first episode of Kriyat Shema, or because the Gemara puts an emphasis on Shem Hashem in the first episode of Kriyat Shema?
You could ask a question. Is having making the tanai a way of having kavana? In other words, imagine for a minute you're davening Shemoneh Esrei, or you're about to daven Shemoneh Esrei, and you're afraid you're not going to have proper kavana during Shemoneh Esrei. So let's say you make it tonight when you wake up in the morning. Right?
To translate?
I hereby state that it or condition my saying of the Shemoneh Esrei that I should be have in mind that I'm standing before God from the beginning right to the end. Then when you actually daven the Shemoneh Esrei, you're thinking about everything else in the world. Except that. So is that called having kavana because you made the tanai before? I think you'd all agree with me that there's something problematic about that. The idea of having kavana during Shemona Esrei is that you should be having kavana when you say the Shemona Esrei, and not that you can make a condition that you can have kavana before, and it's as if you had kavana at the time. So I think Rav Shlomo Zalman, in suggesting this condition, is trying to make a... well, if it's having kavana when you're saying it is going to interfere with the saying, that's, which is very understandable, then let's give the person the opportunity to say that in terms of the higher level of intention when saying Shem Hashem, that it'll have it once a day, and that should apply to everything, and that's better than not having it at all. When you're saying Shema requires kavana. The first pasuk of Shema in particular requires kavana, and it's to the point that if you say it without kavana, you have to repeat the pasuk. So it would appear that the kavana that you have when you're making the condition earlier on is just insufficient for the fulfillment of the requirement of kavana when you're saying Shema. Shema requires kabbalat ol machut shemayim, right? That's the kavana of Shema. And that kabbalat ol machut shemayim requires our understanding on some level the kabbalat machut shemayim of Hashem. You know, and if Hashem, if Hashem as a notion is meant to be understood, as Hayyav, or Adonai Kol, or both, then we should be having that kavana when we're saying it, I had a kavana early in the morning, and that's going to carry me through the day or for the rest of my life, I guess. You know,
okay.
Is that a clear answer?
Okay. With that, we'll close Siman Hey, and we will start Chavruta on Siman Vav on Monday.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming here.